Hello and welcome to the Oxygen Addict Triathlon Podcast, brought to you every week by our sponsors, precisionhydration.com.
Precision Hydration offer electrolyte drinks in different strengths to match how you sweat. Personalize your hydration strategy today at precisionhydration.com and get a free box or tube of pH worth up to $9.99 using the code OXYGENADDICT.
We're also brought to you by foodcell.co.uk.
The next generation of top tube nutritional carriers for your bike, designed to allow endurance triathletes and cyclists to carry enough food and gels while allowing easy access. Use the code FREEPOST for free delivery worldwide. Check it out at foodcell.co.uk.
And we've got a new sponsor this week. We're also brought to you by Thriver.co.
Take health tracking to a new level with your personalised at-home finger prick blood test. Improve your health today and catch any small health issues before they become big health issues. You can get 50% off your first baseline or advanced test with the code OXYGENADDICT.
We'll be talking a bit more about that later, Hels, because I've done a test and it revealed some exciting goings-on in my blood, believe it or not.
We'll find out.
Stuff I needed to take care of, basically. Yeah, it's very, very interesting. But we'll talk more about that later on anyway. So, hello and welcome to the show. How are you doing, Healthy Chops?
What? That's a new nickname.
It's a new nickname. I quite like it, actually. Healthy Chops. Yeah.
Healthy Chops. Where's that one from?
I've been hanging out with a lot of dogs recently. And dogs' names.
So I'm now a dog. Brilliant.
They basically get extended to be like somethingy chops, don't they? So it's a term of endearment in a nice way.
I'll take that. I'm a dog. Great. Yep. All fine.
That's not what I meant. Oh, let's re-record. Oh, it's all been horribly wrong. We're only a minute in. Oh, no. We've only just got a new sponsor. They're going to leave us.
It's all good, Rob. I'm feeling a bit out of it today, actually. I won't lie. And as we said,
we've got to try and keep Hels on track. Come on, listeners, tune your mental energy into it. We're recording really late this week and we're both flagging a bit, aren't we? So we're going to... Three deep breaths,
we'll
come
through.
On. We'll get through it.
The alarm went off this morning at 20 to 6, I think. Yeah, I was on the cross trainer, Monday cross trainer again, 6 a.m.
Good effort.
Boom. Yeah. My upper body, I am working the upper... My arms in preparation for the cross country ski marathon.
How long have you got
which is now only, oh God knows what, like 2 weeks, maybe three weeks, 10th of March.
Excitement.
It's going to be an absolute car crash. This is what's even more hilarious. We've got a lesson booked the day before with Roman, or maybe more of like a Roman.
Roman.
He doesn't speak any English. I don't speak German.
Excellent.
Don't think Lucy Gossage speaks German.
You're going to be great.
Yeah, could be interesting.
You're going to be great, Hels.
It's going to be fantastic. That's basically been my Monday. Bit of cross trainer, bit of other bits and bobs. Did the Wrexham half marathon yesterday. That was great fun.
Yes, I was perusing the results. I saw you in there.
Yeah, chatted my way around.
I was going to say, did you escort somebody around?
I did it as a solid training run. And
nice.
I started it with the intention of very much doing that pace, sticking to that pace, and two other people join me. The plan wasn't to run with other people necessarily, but it was a joy when they both were like, oh, are you going to be running at this pace the whole way? Yes, I am indeed.
It was well executed, was it?
It was, yeah, amazing.
I like that.
Great. Yeah, it was good.
I love it when a plan comes together.
Yeah, really enjoyed it.
Good stuff. How's I spent today learning to jump on my mountain bike?
Oh, skills are progressing.
I have been to Llandegla. I've been down the little jumps track learning to jump. I did a jump that was so big, it would have made it onto one of those Red Bull videos. And my son, who was watching, said to me, I think he needs his eyes testing, because he said, Daddy, your back wheel was that far off the floor, he said, holding his fingers a centimetre apart. No, you don't understand. That was an enormous jump. And he went, no, it wasn't.
So was it about 2 centimetres, but it felt like a metre?
It felt pretty much like I was airborne for a good 2 or 3 seconds, yeah. But apparently not. Apparently it was a centimetre. Apparently the wheels just grazed leaving the ground.
And what is he, 7 now? 6, 7?
7, yeah.
7 year olds, they don't lie, Rob.
He doesn't lie, and unfortunately he's a better mountain biker than me already.
You need to up your game.
It was okay. No drama, no crashes, no one got hurt. It's all good. There were a couple of close calls with a tree, but it was okay.
don't talk about trees.
Okay.
Yeah. No, I'm just saying on the ski marathon, they have mattresses on that one section.
Oh, yeah. Yep. Sorry, I'm with you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah. So we're not talking about trees at the moment.
I'm not sure who's more of danger to themselves, whether it's me on a mountain bike learning to jump.
Me on
sticking the landing.
Cross-country skis.
What am I doing at closing in on 46 years old learning to jump? And you learning to cross-country ski. Life's great, isn't it?
Life's brilliant. Yeah, I love it. Yeah, that's good.
Cool. Right, so first up, let's do some of this stuff. We've got to say thank you. We'll get a bit of energy from the listeners here. Thank you to people who've left 5-star reviews on iTunes this week. We're now up to 168 5-star reviews. So thanks to Mel the Blade, who I'm hoping is an ice skater, not some kind of gangster. TJ Simo, Amy Spicer and AJ Watkin, who amongst others have left us more 5-star reviews. So thanks a lot. We're right up there in the iTunes rankings again. We're not top hells. We're behind someone in the triathlon rankings this week. And the the podcast isn't about triathlon.
I think I did see that.
They've used the word try in the title. So it's like, oh, that's a bit upsetting when they rank above us.
It's all right. Still. I wanted to say as well, thank you so much to everyone who has given some feedback about the menopause special, which we released last week, which has just had loads and loads of good feedback, Rob. It's been pretty overwhelming. So people have emailed and said, you know, I think my wife is about to listen to her first ever podcast. I've had other people get in touch saying, I'm not really, I wouldn't classify myself as a triathlete. However, I like running and, you know, I'm at this stage in my life and this has been really, really helpful. And then just a lot of other people saying, thank you, thank you, thank you. I've learned so much from this. So yeah, if you haven't listened to it or if you want to go back and listen to it, please do, because it's something a little bit different to our normal episodes.
Great stuff. Right, should we jump into our results this week? We've got a couple of races having happened around the world, and we're going to give a shout out first up to our sponsors, foodcell.co.uk. If you haven't been and checked them out on the internet yet, I find it hard to believe you won't have seen them around on social media because they're all over it at the moment. These guys have got a superb solution for carrying food and gels on the bike, either in training or in racing. It's big in the sense of it can fit loads of gels or loads of food in it, but it's not big in the sense that it doesn't create any aerodynamic drag. CFD tested, so it, I think with some of the top-end tri bikes, it even makes it more aerodynamic having one on than not. Bolts to the top tube, or there's some natty little Velcro hoodads that hold it down really nicely. You can operate the top slide a bit with one hand. Waterproof, so no water gets in if it rains. They've thought of everything. You can even take it off quickly and easily to wash it afterwards. So dead impressed with this product. It's been made by a team in Great Britain as well, and you can use the code FREEPOST and get free delivery worldwide, which is really cool. So go and check that out over at foodcell.co.uk. Right, results this week, Hels. First up, we've had the Challenge Wanaka Half, haven't we?
We have indeed. It looked like they had some nice blue skies this year, Rob. Always a very, it's like the traditional, sort of it's a classic, isn't it? A classic race, but it has been reduced to a half rather than full distance over the last couple of years for the pros, and then this year as well for the age groupers. Meredith Kessler was back in action, as was Laura Siddle, and amongst others, Hannah Wells, New Zealand's home athlete, and Kerry Morris of Australia. So in the women's race, it was won by Hannah Wells, who finished in 4:31, just ahead of Meredith Kessler, and Laura Siddle ran her way into third. And then there was another Kiwi winner in the men's race, Braden Curry took the win in 4 hours flat ahead of Andrew Starkovich in 4:02 and Matt Burton in 4:04.
Really, really beautiful race held. I've got to admit, it's on my, if I could get myself to the Southern Hemisphere, I'd love to go and do the Wanaka race. I think it's renowned as being one of the most beautiful places on earth anyway. So the photographs I've seen of it look amazing. Love to get that down on the list of one to get done one day, hey?
I am with you. I would really quite like to go to go back to New Zealand. I've just seen lots of photos and it looks pretty special.
We also had races down in Australia as well. We had the Geelong 70.3, which was taken out by Radka Karlefelt of the Czech Republic, and Javier Gomez took top honours in that one. I'm surprised to see him racing 70.3s actually, Hells, with his sort of stated focus on going to the Olympics again. But he's just such a class athlete, isn't he?
He is a class athlete. And also, Rob, his wife is from the Southern Hemisphere as well. So obviously he has spent a fair bit of time in that part of the world over the past couple of years. Yeah. But no, as you say, it is interesting that he's doing that now when he has said, I want to make the team again for Tokyo 2020.
Yeah.
But I think... Yeah, you're not going to bet against him, are you, making the team for Spain?
No, not at all. No, it's it'd be great to see him and the Brownlees again now, wouldn't it? Because I kind of thought we'd seen the last of the head-to-head battles there with them over the Olympics, certainly at the Olympics. But
Rio, he didn't. I think he's sort of very much got unfinished business, hasn't he? Because Rio, he was injured in the end, so he didn't actually race. Yeah. And then London before that. Yeah, he didn't. He didn't get gold, did he?
Yeah. Great race, though. That's the thing. I think they bring out the best in each other, don't they? Like two really good competitors, or three in this case, really good competitors. I loved that London race. It was epic, wasn't it?
It was very, very epic. But what's really exciting now is that you've got the likes of Vincent Louis as well, who will be, you know, in the mix, and you've got the Norwegians who are going to, you know, they're not going to let them have it all their own way, are they?
Yeah. Henry Schumann. There's a pack of about 10 of them who it's like whoever hits form for the day, isn't it? It could be any three of 10, which is a fantastic position to be in. I think at London, I don't know whether I'm right, but my gut was just like, it's only coming down to three people here. Yeah. I think other people probably had a different view, but most of the Brits probably didn't. But yeah, it'd be great to see them all go head to head over the Olympic distance again if that could happen.
It's a big if, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is.
Oh, well. Watch this space.
Yeah. Exciting times, eh?
I know, it comes on so quickly.
It doesn't feel like we're already talking about the next Olympic cycle, aren't we? Because it's selection races this year, I guess.
Yeah, that's right. It's they'll have the test event later on this summer, and selection as well. This is like the key year.
Yeah.
Really. And then the Olympics 2020. It's mad. And to think that I was in Rio.
Time's going by too quick, Hells.
I know. Anyway.
Anyway, right, we'll jump forward a little bit. We'll jump into Coach's Couch because we've had a question this week in the Oxygen Addict Triathlon community group from Rich Hastings regarding heart rate and running and stuff.
Yep. So Rich says, I've got a question about heart rates. I worked my running aerobic run heart rate out, my age minus 180, which gave me 144 beats for target heart rate.
Yep.
I was reading that zone 2 training should be 65 to 75% of max heart rate. Mine, 185, which would give me 139 target. Am I currently training at the correct heart rate of 144 as I have been, or should I think about reducing it 139, or does it not matter as long as I'm around these figures?
Oh, there's a lot of confusion going around in poor Rich's head there, isn't there? All kinds of numbers and twirls. And I thought this would make a great question to get on because I think it gives a great example of how most triathletes' minds work, how we kind of focus in on the tiny details and really worry about them. And maybe we can help Rich take a couple of steps back and see the bigger picture and go, this is all right. So Rich, first thing is, everything's all right, mate. You're there or thereabouts, the right kind of pace and heart rate. So you don't need to be worrying. With a couple of things we can clear up for you. Rich has done the aerobic run heart rate test. So some people will have heard of this, as some people call it the 180 take away your age formula. Some people call it the, what's his name? The guy came up with it. My mind's just gone completely blank, Hells.
What, for the max heart rate?
Maffetone. Phil Maffetone.
Yeah, Phil Maffetone.
So he was a coach who worked with Mark Allen, and he came up with this idea. And it was a refinement of the idea from back in the 80s of, well, take your age away from 220 to find out your max heart rate. He sort of said, well, if you take your age away from 180, we get this kind of aerobic heart rate, which is a much safer area for people to be training in. And there's lots of arguments and different opinions backwards and forwards as to whether it's valid and to whether it's, you know, what the pluses and minuses of it are. But the reason I like doing it, I do it once a month with my athletes. And regardless of how accurate or not, in inverted commas, people think this is, what it does guarantee is if you take your age away from 180, you end up running for the vast majority of people at a much, much lower heart rate than you would ever run at usually. So when you talk about testing with most people, they usually think about going as hard as they possibly can, which is fine. Like, you go out and you race and you go as hard as you can, but it's really hard to do that in training, especially in running, and get an accurate result. It's really hard to do that in winter for running when it's really cold and you've got that worry about picking up injuries and niggles. So I really like doing the aerobic run test once a month, especially during winter, because it allows people to see progress in that their pace gets faster over a given period of time for the same heart rate. So if we test people the start of month one, the start of month two, the start of month three, it's not uncommon for that what starts out as a ridiculously slow pace to end up maybe a minute and a half per mile faster after 3 months worth of doing this trial. So what you get to see there is your aerobic system or your fat burning system has been improved by the training that you've done over the winter. And for most people, it also shows us at the start when they do the first test, it gives you a snapshot of how untrained your aerobic system is for running. Because most of us, we enjoy that feeling of running quite quickly. So we blow right through the fat burning zone. We never do any running at all at the kind of low pace that's actually going to increase your body's ability to oxidize fat. And so because it never gets trained, it never gets improved. This gives you a snapshot of that. Now, that's the 180 minus age formula talked about a little bit. That's a completely different thing to zone two. And I had a quick look in Training Peaks earlier on. They've got something like 9 or 10 different ways of working out your heart rate zones within there. So that's the first thing about zones. No one can agree on how to do it. So Rich here has said, you know, it should be 65 to 75% of max heart rate. There are so many different ways of defining it that the zone just isn't the same. So this is the problem with heart rate zones. When I'm working with my athletes, I'm really clear what formula we're using to work out heart rate zones. But actually, to make this simple, I don't use heart rate at all for running, except for when we do that aerobic heart rate run test. All the rest of the run training is done by telling people, I want you to run at this specific pace, which we use, we get from a pace calculator. So basically, you can just forget about heart rate entirely for running, except when you do that test once per month. And that allows you, I think it just gives you that clarity of mind to go, right, I don't need to worry whether I'm 2 or 3 beats a minute faster or slower than I should be, because heart rate can be affected by so many different things. You know, hydration, heat, whether you're tired, whether you're getting ill, whether you're sick, whether you're really tired. So you can forget about heart rate entirely and just run to pace and know that you're getting the right amount of physiological stress, if you like. So Rich, it's all good, mate. Don't worry. Whatever heart rate you're using for your test, stick with that. And the rest of the time, use the pace calculator on our website to work out what paces that you're running at.
Yeah, I was going to say, Rob, if you're doing the heart rate, you know, for the test, then as long as you're using the same thing every time you do the test and you've got that consistency.
Exactly. it actually doesn't matter what the number is, as long as that heart rate number is the same. And again, if people are really interested in doing this aerobic test, there's a page on our Oxygen Addict website. It's /run test. And there's various different bits and bobs you can do. If you've trained for a while, you add 5 more beats a minute on. And if you're over the age of 50, I think it's really good to add up to 10 more beats on. But there's loads of instructions on there about how to tweak the formula for you particularly. But again, like you've said, Hels, it doesn't matter as long as you can actually run. Because one of the problems people have when they do this test is if it's the first time they've tried to do an aerobic run, often they'll go, I can't even run at this pace. I've got to walk every time the road vaguely goes uphill, or, you know, and what that does is it just reveals a weakness in your fitness, an area for improvement. If you can't run at that relatively low heart rate, what it shows is you're just not fat adapted, is the wrong term, but you've got loads of progress to make in terms of refining your fuel supply, especially if you're going to be doing an Ironman later in the year. There's loads of refinements you can make. And the good news is it's really easy to do. You just have to change the way you train with your running a little bit. So, that's basically, I'm going to go on for ages and ages about this. I'm going to stop and shut myself up here. If people are interested, they can go to that page and check it out. Or we've also got a link in the show notes to a webinar about the time training system. There's about a 15-minute section in there dedicated to this. So you can just sit back and put your headphones on and listen to that when you're doing the washing up all night. Okay, so link to that in the show notes. All good?
Real. Yeah, all good.
I love all that stuff. I used to love the tiny details of heart rate and pace and all that kind of stuff. And I can totally relate when people really get into the tiny details as well. The most important thing is you don't get wound up and stressed out about whether you're doing it right or not, because just getting out the door is 85% of the battle, I think.
Definitely.
All right, so we've got an interview, Hels, this week with the great, wonderful, lovely Joe Skipper. I'm trying to hook up with him for ages, actually, but he's down in Australia, as we'll hear, doing a big training camp. So getting the times to link up was a bit of a challenge. He's been doing loads of swimming with the Swim Smooth squad. We hear about his race in Kona, his plans to race Texas and other things as well. So before we go to this, we're just going to give a shout out to our interview sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Remember, guys, you can get yourselves £9.99 worth of free product using the code OXYGENADDICT. If you haven't done the online sweat test, get on there and do that. It's just a few questions and it'll give you a real good lead as to whether you're a particularly heavy or particularly salty sweater just by answering their questions. And they then sell tailored hydration salts in different strengths. So they can say to you, right, you need the 250ml sachets, or Rob, you need the 1500ml sachets because you sweat like a pig and it's very salty sweat. So if you suffer from cramp or if you struggle when you're racing the heat, these guys have got the solution for you. Go and check out the information at precisionhydration.com. And if you haven't tried it yet, again, you can get that free box or tube with the code OXYGENADDICT. All right, so here's our interview of the week with Joe Skipper. Joe Skipper, welcome back onto the show. And just before we've been on air there, Joe's just been telling me about life down in Australia, and it sounds like it's not treating you too shabbily down there, Joe, at the moment.
No, it's been great. Like, gorgeous weather every day. Wake up, you know, blue skies. I was just saying to you, weren't I, Rob, like, we've been down the beach and I've had a couple of coffees, or I've had a couple of cocktails. Living the dream.
Everybody listening in England is instantly jealous as they look out the window and see the sleet driving against the office window right now.
I know, like, that's a bad thing, isn't it, about the UK? It's like, if it was just cold and blue skies, it wouldn't be too bad, but it's just the sleet, snow and rain for months on end, which just grinds you down in the end, doesn't it?
Well, I think you've done a smart thing, man. I'm looking forward to hearing all about the winter training camp, because we've been saying for years it's great to get away somewhere warm if you can. So tell us about the trip down to Australia then. How did this come about? How long have you been there, and where are you, and who you're training with and all that stuff?
Well, to be honest, I've always wanted to do it. And then my girlfriend recently qualified as a GP, and she had finished, so she didn't have a job at that time, you know, for this winter. So it was a good time for us both to go away. So we just thought, well, yeah, let's go to Australia. And then we broke the trip up with a week in Bangkok to start off with, because I was like at the end of the season, I was having a bit of time off, although I did want to kind of like do a little bit, but that, to be honest, that was a bit too long. I mean, I don't know if you've been to Bangkok, Rob, but that was a nightmare at the start. Like, it was just so polluted, nowhere to go, and then towards the end we were dying to get out, and then ended up getting to Perth on about, I think it was the 13th of December.
Okay.
So yeah, been out here for now about 6 weeks, and I've been training with Paul from Swim Smooth.
Oh yeah, Paul Newsom.
Yeah, Paul Newsom for the swimming, which has been great, because I think I said before on one of the podcasts with you that I was following his training sessions, you know, back home and stuff like that. So to actually meet him, get some video analysis, and like swim with his squad as well and do similar sessions to what I was doing back home has been really, really good.
Oh, it's, well, first up, like being in Perth, it's magic that there are so many good outdoor pools, so many good outdoor 50 meter pools, so many good squads to swim with. But to be there with the man himself, to be with Paul Newsom and training with his squad, you know, you've got the, like, the physiological background there of the training sessions, but you've also got people of a similar ability to train with and people a bit stronger than you to train with as well, which is just the perfect environment, isn't it, for a guy like you?
Yeah, and to be honest, even if there's like at some of the sessions when there's like not people to like sit on their feet and you're like the fastest one or whatever, and Paul's so good at like the coaching, because he seems to know exactly what your CSS is. So he gives you the tempo trainers and there's just no escape, you know, even if they're, you know, he'll know exactly what paces you should be holding. And he'll give you the tempo trainer and, you know, some of the stuff he'll say, you know, the beep is set to what time you need to just turn around. So it's like there's no specific target paces to hit. It's just you get, the faster you swim, the more recovery you get. And other sets, so you like set it and you're swimming at a target pace and you get 15 to 20 seconds rest. And he seems to get it like bang on. So you're just training at the right, like at the right intensities all the time. And sometimes it's really tough, you know, to hit the paces. Sometimes you find it's easier than what you thought, but they're just really like good quality sessions, you know, and they're like, yeah, designed for each. Although you swim with the squad instead of like doing, like, you know, I found before in the past when you swim with some squad sessions, it's like you just smash it all the time. And everyone's trying to hang on to the person in front. Whereas these just seem like they're really designed for the individual, even though you're swimming with like another 30 other people there. But yeah, so that's really good.
It's such a key thing, isn't it? Having the session that you're doing be specifically targeted at your pace, even if you're swimming with other people around you, and not having your pace dictated by the fastest swimmer. That's a massive difference.
Yeah, definitely. And then for the cycling, I've done a decent amount probably by myself, but when I have been out, I've been out with a guy called Alistair Kerr, who was racing as a pro. I think he still is racing as a pro, I think, although he's working now. But he's a really like decent athlete. And then a young guy called Ollie Stenning, I've been out with him a few times. And I went out with a group ride like this past week, which I'll probably go out with again. That was decent. But it's been hard fitting the cycling in to link up with a lot of people, because I've been trying to go to the run squad and then the swim squad. And there's only, you know, there's some, if you're trying to go train with people all the time, you just end up not doing the right things. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So the cycling, I've been out with like people, but I don't mind going out if I have to by myself, you know, on the bike. Like, I just put on a podcast or something like that, you know, and if I've got efforts, just put on some tunes and I can kind of hit the right thing. But whereas the swim sessions, I want to favour going with people on the swimming, and with the running sessions with people, because I don't really enjoy pushing it hard on the run and the swim by myself.
Yeah.
So I'd rather like favoritise like linking up with groups for them two sports. So I've been like doing a lot of run training with a group called Front Runners, which is a great standard. Like, there's the track sessions are awesome. They probably get about 50 people turn up to a track session, like minimum. And then on a Saturday, they do like a tempo kind of session. They probably get about 20, 30 people sometimes for that. And I've been doing a bit with like Nick Baldwin as well, because he trains with them. And he's at the moment just training for a marathon. So he's like really focused on his running. He's running very well. So, and yeah, like, again, yeah, and again, I trained with that Alistair Caird and Ollie. I've been out with them. We've done a few long runs together. So the swimming, the running has been great, you know, training with the groups. And then I kind of just fit my cycling around that a bit. And like, if I can go out with people, then obviously, you know, I'll go out with people. But like, it's been harder to link up with groups. So if I have been out with people, it's normally just me and one other person or something like that, rather than like a group of 10 or 20 people.
Well, it sounds like you found a setup that really allows you to sort of keep your strengths as they are, but also really work on bringing your swim up. And that's going to be the absolute key for you, isn't it? We've always said, if you can get that swim just that little bit faster, then all of a sudden your whole race dynamics are completely different, aren't they?
Yeah, it's just like swimming more, really, because like before, until I broke my until I did my back last year, I wasn't actually swimming that much, really, to make the jump up, which is probably why I was like at the level I was. So I was only swimming like 14-15 k's a week. Like it was consistently 14 or 15, but it just wasn't enough, you know, to become a front pack swimmer.
Yeah.
But then because I couldn't swim for a while, it meant that I had more time to do swimming and cycling. So I was doing like 23-24 k's a week, similar quality sessions, but then more volume as well. And that was when I took a massive jump up. And then I kind of, when I started running again, I made sure I would keep my swimming at a decent volume. And obviously then going into Kona, I had a really good swim. So that was off like five, six months of like keeping the swim volume high. But then in rough, I opened the front pack as well. I was only about a minute behind, you know, like the lead guys or lead first up the water, I think was about 90 seconds ahead of me. And that was after about 2 months of like high swim volume. So obviously this winter out here has been good because I've been trying to keep my swim volume fairly high and do decent quality sessions. And I think that's just what it was just like keeping the volume high, doing good intensity. But, you know, to make a massive jump in your swimming, you can't just do it over 4 to 6 weeks. You know, it's kind of got to be like minimum six months to 18 months of like, you know, decent volume and quality to really reap the benefits of that.
Yeah, it's that classic like 100k a month of swimming, isn't it? The consistent 25k weeks for a pro like you seems to be the kind of benchmark of that's where you'll see a real stride forward, as opposed to kind of feeling that you're sometimes getting there and you're sometimes not.
Yeah, so for me, I'm probably about 20, 22 at the moment. But if I was to do 25, then, you know, and do that for like 6 months, that would be huge.
Yeah.
Because I try and keep the good quality sessions in as well. And then like around it, when I do the other stuff, I kind of play it a bit by ear, depending on like how I'm feeling tiredness wise, because I don't want to just end up doing like the volume for the sake of doing volume, you know, where I'm plowing up and down and I'm like feeling tired, but just thinking, oh, you know, I've got to do X amount of kilometers to get my volume up. So it kind of like, I make sure I do the key sessions and I'm swimming like, you know, six times a week. But then on an easier one, if it's between, you know, like a red mist and a CSS set, if I'm feeling a bit tired, then, you know, I might only do 2K, two to three kilometers. I don't kind of force myself to do like 4 or 5K when I'm feeling tired, you know, flogging myself when I've got a hard set the next day, because I think you can get a bit caught up in chasing numbers, can't you?
Yeah.
So if I I want to do 25, if I was up to swimming, like say 25Ks, 26Ks a week, I'd want it to be like good quality session still, but then still recovering enough to do the other sessions in between. So I might get up to that, but it would just depend on like, as you're further into a training block, you're a bit fitter, aren't you? And you can sustain like higher training load. And then I guess I'll be swimming 25Ks hopefully a week by the end of the winter going into the season, but feeling like I'm recovering enough to do the hard sessions well.
Yeah. So what's the aim for your early season races then, with you being down in Australia for the winter? Have you got races coming up in the relatively near future?
No, not really. So like I think after last year, because I did quite a few Ironmans and stuff, and by the time I tried to give Arizona a go at the end of the year, and really it was just one race too many. You know, I think after Kona I was like, I felt really good and I knew I was in really good run shape after Kona, and because of the heat and humidity in Kona, I didn't really do the run a really good run what I knew I could. I mean, it was my fastest run in Kona, but that was just because I was so fit going into it that even if the heat took a lot out of me, I knew I would still run pretty fast just because of the shape what I was in going into it. So I thought with Arizona, cooler conditions, you know, I could do a really good run and have a really quick Ironman. I wanted to give it a go, but which would have been okay probably if the race was 2-3 weeks after Kona, but it was 5 weeks and I really struggled, to be honest, with a bit of motivation. I felt a bit tired. My sessions were hit and miss. Some days I'd have really good sessions, you know, and I'd be like, wow, like Arizona's going to go really well. And then other days I'd have terrible sessions and I'd be like, you know, a bit tired.
Yeah, the anyway, classic overly tired feeling.
Yeah, and so Arizona came around, and I remember saying to my mate like about 2 weeks before, like, I wish I hadn't have entered Arizona now. Like, I'd like booked everything, and I was like, God, I've like kind of committed to it now, but I really wish I hadn't. So I went out there, and it didn't go that well. Came back, and I thought, well, I need to take some decent amount of time off. Like, I feel a bit burnt out from the season. I've raced a lot. I want to make sure I'm like fresh for next year, and like get a decent winter in rather than like getting back into training really quick. So I kind of like got back into training on December the 13th when I came here. That was kind of when I thought, right, I'll get to Australia then. I'll kick off the winter's training properly then. So I'm not actually racing anytime soon. Like normally, I like in other years, I've raced Ironman New Zealand at the start of March, but I just thought it would be too soon this year. If I've started back training on December the 13th, it only gives me like mid January is like 1 month, mid February is 2 months, then you'd be looking at the tapering. So I'd only have got like eight weeks of training in, and that would be from a really low level, because I lost a lot of fitness, like time off what I had after Arizona. And I mean, I didn't think I hit Arizona in that great of fitness. After Kona, I was probably I was pretty less fit by the time Arizona came around than what I was in Kona. My actual big race at the start of the season isn't until the end of April, which is Ironman Texas.
Okay, so you're lining Texas up again. That's a race that's really worked for you in the past, isn't it?
Yeah, so I got second in 2015, and in 2016 I punctured, which was absolutely devastating because I was in it was one of them races where you're on the bike and you're looking at the power and you think your power meter's like needs calibrating because the power is so easy to hold and your legs feel so good. It was one of them days. It would have been
Oh, what a heartbreaker.
I know. It was like, you always want a puncher. Like when I was doing that race in Arizona in November, I was hoping I'd got a puncher so I could stop. Was one of them days over here where, but Texas was like the complete opposite. It was one of them days where you feel invincible, on the bike, and you think, God, like, I'm gonna have my this is gonna be an awesome day. And I punctured, and I was so devastating in that. Like, I was absolutely gutted. Then 2017, last year, I was supposed to go there. I had my flights booked. I'd even booked my dad's flights. He was going to come out there and help me. And then I had the slip disc in my back, and I couldn't do it, and I lost the money on the flights. So it's been a race what I've like tried to go to every year since I did it in 2015. But since 2015, I haven't actually like finished, done it properly.
You do some good luck this year, then I reckon, hey.
Hopefully, yeah. And I love the I really like the race, and the whole town gets behind it. They love it out there, and there's so triathlon's pretty big, to be honest, in that kind of area. And the course kind of suits me as well. Flat, fast courses. I think when I look back at what races I've had my best results in, and it seems like them kind of courses work quite well for me. The only downside this year with the races, it's going to be probably warmer, like when I first did it in 2015, because I think they've moved the race 2 weeks later, which doesn't sound like much, but kind of at the start of April, I think the weather's a bit hit and miss. You get some days where it's 30 degrees and really humid, and you can get other days where it's 23 degrees and it's like perfect conditions. But when I did it the first time in May, it was like every day was pretty much like 30 degrees humid. So I think probably be hot and humid, although we could get lucky and we might get a day about 25, 26, but it's probably going to be that would be very lucky if we get that now for this year.
Hey, well, listen, let's rewind a little bit because obviously we've looked forward and we've talked about your training post Kona, but the big result for you was obviously your seventh place in Kona this year, which was just fantastic to see it all come together and you have a great race on the day. So first up, congratulations on that. We were sitting here in Oxygen Addict Towers cheering you on, going, come on, Joe, he's in the top 10. This is awesome. So will you talk us through the race and how the day panned out for you?
So starting off in the swim, at the start, when we were lined up on the start line, there was like a group to the left and there was a group to the right, and there was no one in the middle. And so I thought, well, I'll take my chances. I'll go in the middle, which is it can be quite risky because if they start off fast and you're not on anyone's feet, obviously you can lose time, unless you're obviously one of the faster swimmers. If you're like someone, like Josh Amberger, starting off in the middle with no one around him would probably be perfect because he's going to get a hassle-free start, and he's one of the fastest anyway, so he doesn't want people like hitting his arm, does he, and slowing him down, getting in his way. But obviously no one's going to let him start in the middle because a lot of people want to get on his feet, don't they? Because they think he's the fastest. If I stand on his feet, I'm going to get like an easy ride to the out front. So I started in the middle and there was just me and Luke McKenzie there, which I thought was, for me, it was pretty good because I've got quite a quick sprint, like compared to what my overall swimming's like. You know, when I've swum like quick 50s and 100s and stuff, I'm normally like a lot quicker than what people would expect. So I can get quite a good start. But so starting there was great for me because I knew I wouldn't get hounded at the start where people swimming over me. And I thought if I get a quick start, just literally swim straight. And when if the groups combine, hopefully I can jump on the feet, you know, of someone after say 200 meters or so when it's settled down a bit, and then I'll be in a good position rather than, you know, starting off in a group and getting like hit left from, you know, from left and right, and then end up losing some feet and then missing the pack. So I started there anyway. And I just said to Luke at the start, I said, mate, I said, don't worry about me. I said, I'm just going to go on your feet. And like, I won't get in your way because I thought he's generally a better swimmer than me. If you look at his times, you know, in an Ironman, he's normally probably a bit quicker. So I thought there's no point me swimming next to him and getting in his way and messing the swim up for him, which is going to slow me down as well. Like, it's in our best interest for us both to go as quick as possible at the start for the first 200 or 300 meters so we can get as far up the field as we can, you know, when it converges.
Yeah.
And just right on his feet. He like went for it. I just stayed, you know, in the bubbles, and then the groups end up combining, and next thing I know, I'm just in that like, in the main group, which got out of the water in about 50 minutes. I mean, the rest of the swim after that was pretty much like hassle free. It was just like in a pack, just felt like you were moving reasonably well, but like it never felt like it was really hard where you were going to get dropped. But then when I tried to move up a few times, it was like really hard. You know, I'd probably say it felt like CSS pace. I was probably swimming maybe a bit under, which, you know, in the middle of an Ironman's pretty quick, isn't
pretty
it?
Tasty. You know, it's that classic thing, isn't it? If you get in a pack swimming at the right speed for you, it feels okay swimming on someone's feet. But the minute you try and overtake them, you go, oh, I reckon I can go a bit faster. The minute you pull out, you're going nowhere. You're not even getting onto the hip.
Exactly. So I tried that a few times and I was like, I'm literally at the peril of the guys in front of me.
Yeah.
Because I was like, if I lose the feet, then I can't really move up, because I tried to move up because I knew I was towards the back of that group. And I didn't want to be there. I knew I needed to move up at every opportunity. So, but when I tried to move up on the side, I couldn't. It was just too hard.
Yeah.
I guess that obviously, like, if I was just holding the pace, I'd probably be swimming CSS pace. But then to move up, I was swimming under CSS pace. And then you need to really be out there for like 100, 150 meters to actually make a decent amount of like ground, don't you?
Yeah. So, were you aware of who was in the group with you at all? Or are you just kind of, I've made the second group and I'm swimming. This is awesome.
I recognized like Luke McKenzie, and I could tell it was like Sebastian Keenly. And then I knew from the times afterwards, or when we got out the water, I think it was like Cameron Worth was just on left of me.
I actually thought it was
Lionel Sanders, and I was like, oh bloody hell, like I'm swimming with Lionel. You know, I was thinking like, I'm definitely not. But yeah, it turns out that it wasn't. So it was like Cameron, but. Yeah, so it was all right. It was a pretty good swim, but it was I needed to be a bit fitter, really, because then I could have moved up a bit and I would have been in a better position. And maybe I might have swum with that group that did 49. You know, I was fitter, then like I would have been there. But that was just, it was nothing I could do on the day. Like, it was probably the best swim I could have hoped for. You know, good start on the feet. If you can't move up because they're swimming too quick, then there's nothing you can do, is there?
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Yeah, totally. So, but it's good to be, I mean, getting out of the water and seeing Sebby Keenley there and obviously realizing it was actually Cam Worth and not Lionel Sanders next to you. What was your experience of sort of leaving on the bike at that point then? Because you must have thought, we've got our own little train going here. This is awesome.
Well, not really, because the run through transition is pretty manic, and I was just concentrating on putting my top on, because I had to put a cycle top on because I trialed it in the swim beforehand, like in the practice swim with my cycle top on underneath, and it came out on the side at the sides of the swim skin. It was like a parachute.
Okay.
So I was really concentrating on making sure I got that on as quick as possible and it didn't rip. And then you get through, and I knew I needed a quick transition because it's manic in like getting out the town when you're in a group that size, because people at the front are pushing it, but then it's so hard to overtake because the draft busters are there And they're willing, sometimes they penalise people going through the town for being too close when it's like so hard not to be too close because someone might take a corner really slowly and all of a sudden you close up on them. So it's just like you don't really get a chance to think about like where you are, you know, like, or if you're able to do a train, you know, at that time, because you can't, like the main thing is just to get through the town, make sure that you don't lose any time when that you're with people you need to be and not get a penalty.
Yeah.
And once we got out of the town, like, I mean, Cameron Worth must have got through the group. He obviously had a better transition than me and got through, managed to overtake people and get to the front and then was able to set his own tempo. Whereas I kind of got out of the group and I was towards the back out of transition and I couldn't overtake because when we got onto the Queen K Highway, there was like 30 people in front of me and everyone was like 12 meters behind each other. So with the way the rules are, if I want to overtake someone, I need the gap to be bigger than 12 meters, but no one was leaving a gap bigger than 12 meters. So I'd have to overtake everyone.
Yeah.
And I made that mistake before, like the previous time when I was in Kona. I think I said on the podcast with you that I tried to overtake and people were holding you out there and you end up doing loads of spikes of like 450 watts, you know, or more like 500 watts. And it just ends up burning loads of matches. So, and obviously with my experience of being there for the previous two times as well, I knew that a lot of people fall off the pace from halfway. They just go too hard. Even if they're in a group, they just seem to overcook it. So I was stuck at the back. There was no gaps to overtake. And I just thought, well, I'm going to have to wait until we get to the climb going from Kwaihai to Harvey.
Yeah.
And that's the first time I'll probably get to move up. I mean, if I could get a chance to move up beforehand, then I would have definitely taken it because I didn't want to be at the back of that group. I wanted to be, you know, I knew my cycling was in really good form, so I was quite up for like riding hard and seeing what I could do. But anyway, I waited until then, and Lionel Sanders actually came up just before that. Well, he came up. I saw him coming just before we started the climb, and that was when people started falling back, and I could get some gaps. So I kind of moved up before he got there, and then my game plan was that I thought that he was going to have to ride pretty hard to catch us, but I knew that he was going to be going for it and willing to ride hard. So I was thinking, well, I'll just cruise it anyway. And then when he gets there, I'll make sure that I stay with him because it will be an easy ride to the front of the race. And hopefully if we can, I can get off the front with him because, you know, like looking at what happened last year. But when he caught us, I mean, he wasn't on a good day, and you kind of tell because when he was like riding the front, it didn't feel that hard. Like, you know, it was what you would have expected it to be.
Yeah.
And then a bit later, once we got back onto the Queen K, he fell off the pace. And that was when people were going off the front and, you know, it was all kinds of carnage really. And yeah, I kind of like lost, I must've lost some time to the group with like Dreitz and Patrick Langer coming out. Like somehow they must've pulled away on the way up to the, like before the climb, you know, on the Queen K. I couldn't see it because I had so many people in front of me. It was impossible to tell what the hell was going on. I just could, all I could see was that there wasn't any space for me to like actually overtake. But once I got to the front, which was on the descent from Harvey, then I was with Matt Russell and we just like rode pretty hard and we just rode across to that group. And that was my highest power of the race, that hour from like down the descent and then like along the Queen K, and then with about 12 miles to go, I was in that group. And I think there must have been about two people off the front. There must have been like, I think Starkey and Cameron Worth. And then I think our group came in from like third place down.
Yeah, there was about, what was it, about eight of you, something like that at that point, I think from memory. It's a while ago now.
More than that, there must have been about 13 or 14 of us.
Oh, was it as many as that? Wow. Because that's something that's kind of hard to get a feel for from the coverage sometimes is when, you know, when the gaps are 12 meters, it feels really close to you guys, but on the coverage, you only get to see maybe one or two people in the group. So there's about 15 of you where they're getting off the bike altogether there and essentially second place together.
Yeah, something like that. I reckon there was about 13 or 14 of us. But they need to show that kind of stuff on the coverage, don't they? And like, you know, what they need to do is like show actual power data of what people are putting out and talk about it, you know, real life power and speed data, and like have time and splits come up. And, you know, like when you go over a time and mat, like have time mats or something on there, or like look at the group and tell you who's actually in the group, because it's not a good it's not good for the sport if you don't know actually who's in the first big group coming into the second transition, which is kind of a key part of the race where the people that are watching them. People are in it, you know.
Yeah, that's exactly it. The only chance you get to see is as people are literally running by the commentator going into T2, and you're like, is there two people or are there 15 people there?
Yeah, it's ridiculous, really. Like, they need to, they should definitely make that a lot better and have more cameras. I thought it was going to be better this year because we heard that the race was being covered, televised by the people that do the Tour de France, you know, the same group. So we thought it would be a lot better, you know, more motorbikes and stuff. But I guess that whatever the budget must have not been that high, and people were probably the same
quite. I think it was better overall, I think, but like you say, there's a ways to go yet where they can really create the idea to you of even just little things on the screen like they used to have in the Tour de France of, you know, the gap from here to here is this, would really help us out, wouldn't it?
And like Bart Ennett, he was like well down out the swim, you know, he was 3-4 minutes, but He was flying when we came down Harvey, and like he went past me and like bridged up across the group before me. So it would have been great for people that were watching to see what kind of power data he was putting out, you know, when he rode across to the group, because it must have been pretty high.
Yeah.
It would be good to see the kind of stuff, you know, or if you could actually see, you know, what their heart rate data is as well at the same time.
Yeah.
Just make it so entertaining. But at the moment you're watching it, you don't get any metrics on the screen, you just see a side on view of someone riding a bike, which doesn't make it for interesting, you know. If you're watching the Tour de France and all you saw was like the lead person in the breakaway from a side on view for 6 hours, it would be really boring, wouldn't it? But you know, it's the commentators and the coverage that make the sport, isn't it?
They need to get me and Helen on there, mate. That's what we need, a little bit of British flavor. So listen, tell us about the run then. You all pile in together into the transition tent. Obviously at this point, I mean, what was your experience? Did you realize where you were? Did you realize there were only two guys up the road? And essentially the race is on at that point, isn't it?
Yeah, I knew there wasn't many like up the road. I thought that there was like one or two. Yeah, I knew actually, because I saw when I was coming in, that I saw Andrew Starkovic coming out and I could hear the commentators saying stuff as well. So I knew, and I kind of got an idea when we caught the group, because I knew obviously what place I got out of the water, and I saw from the turnaround in Harvey. So I knew that I was like well up there just from like how many people I could see in front of me at the turnaround, and then obviously how many people were in this group. But yeah, when we started the run, I instantly felt like really hot, which is like happens all the time in Kona. So it felt like it was survival from the start. Which is really frustrating, because it feels like I can never like push the run like I want to. You know, I'd love to be able to race the run like I do in other triathlons, what I've done, you know, like Ironman UK this year or like Hamburg, because I get off the bike and my legs felt fantastic, you know, like muscular wise. And like, you know, my nutrition was great. You know, I had decent energy. I had my muscles felt fine. I didn't feel like, you know, I pushed the bike normally in an Ironman a lot harder than what I felt like I did doing Kona, and I was making sure that I was eating and drinking a lot, you know. So when I was in that group, I just made sure I got all the calories in, so there was nothing like that which limits me. But it's just I get off the bike and I'm just so hot. So I feel like I'm on like damage limitation from the start, you know. I learned from last time, don't start the run too quick, because once you overheat you just don't come back from it. So I kind of cruised the run, but and then I still felt like I was pretty hot, but I knew I could kind of keep the pace up. I could, every time I tried to go a bit quicker, I'd feel like I was massively overheating. So I just feel like I have to like almost take it steady rather than actually race the run in Kona. So I basically had to do that for the whole thing. And then I knew people would fall apart towards the end, and I picked some off. And, you know, I was running with Matt Russell quite a bit, but then he dropped me along the Queen K towards the Energy Lab. And probably took about a minute out of me. And then coming out the Energy Lab, I think we got a bit cloud cover. So I could pick my pace up again then. I was like running about 20 seconds a mile quicker. And I took him down to about 15 seconds. I remember coming into an aid station, like he was then going out as I was like getting drinks and stuff from it. So he was really close.
Yeah.
And in front of him, we could see fifth place and we could see fourth place as well. So I could see, so there was like fourth, fifth and sixth I could see, like all in front of me, and I was like, this is great, you know, if I keep this going I could end up getting fourth place here.
Yeah.
But then the cloud and the sun comes out, and then I lost like 20 seconds a mile again, and obviously they started just pulling away, and Matt Russell was really close to fifth place, which was Braden, and that must have given him a bit of a boost. and he just missed out on that by 3 seconds. So, like, he pulled away from me again then. Once he pulled away and kind of had a minute on me, I knew that I wasn't going to catch him. So I was kind of just cruising a bit. You know, I knew I was miles ahead. I mean, I wasn't, like, taking it easy, but I wasn't, like, completely, like, on the limit, because it wasn't really any point, was there? Like, I couldn't catch him. He was, like, pulling away, and, like, so I was just, like, in seventh place then.
Yeah.
But
it must be very frustrating, Joe, that, like you said, as soon as the clouds come over, the heat has got such an effect on you that you can immediately pick the pace up now that heat stress is gone. And then the minute the sun comes back out, it's like you've got to back off again because you've got no choice.
Yeah, I didn't even back off. It was just like I was just too hot that it just slowed me down. It wasn't like a conscious like, oh, I'm going to back off because the sun's out again now. It was almost like I just felt like I was like completely overheating, that I had no choice, you know, that the pace just literally slowed down because I don't know, like I was too hot. But I need to figure out really and like try some different stuff like coolant. So next year I'll probably try a really white kit, you know, not completely white, obviously where the chamois is, but a really light cut and shorter hair, you know, like, really cut my hair short for the race and try and then see, like, have a look at other stuff, you know, see if there's any other cooling things. But, you know, maybe stuff like that might make a little bit more of a difference.
Yeah.
And also try some other stuff, because if I can cope with the heat, I could do a fantastic race out there, you know. So it's just, that's just the main thing for me, is just being able to cope with the heat and run close to what I can do in a normal Ironman. Because I think I seem to lose a lot more than what a lot of other people lose. I don't think many other people lose as much time as what I do in Kona compared to what they've run, you know, consistently through the rest of the year.
And that's the thing as well, looking at your run split of 2:54, we've seen you run 2:45, haven't we? And if you could get to that performance, that would have had you in second place on the day. So it's all there to play for, isn't it? If you just get the right weather conditions and acclimation.
Yeah, I've done way faster than 2:45. Like, that was like my slowest like Ironman run out of like three runs this year, you know, like before. Well, I've done like a 2:41 and 2:42 run up three times before, and a 2:38 before.
Yeah.
So I've run like 2:45 loads of times. Like, you know, I did it in Roth this year. I did a 2:42, and I was like only been running 6 weeks after my back injury.
Well, that would make a great question. Having run 2:38 was that in Roth when you did that one?
Yeah.
Can you ever see if you got yourself into a run battle with, you know, like someone like Patrick Langer or Bart Aernauts, if you guys are going side by side and you get yourself in that position and you're not too hot on the day, can you see you guys going that kind of speed on Kona race day and bringing that level down even further?
Cool. I mean, for me, that's a big jump off for me, you know, going from 2:54 to that. Especially in Kona, like the heat is just excruciating. Even a not a cool day, even not a hot day in Kona, for me is like still pretty hot. You know, yeah. Like you've been out there before, haven't you? And the weather is just so consistent, isn't it, all the time? It's like if you're lucky, you get more cloud cover, I think, rather than like the heat. Like, you know, the heat's pretty much the same every day, isn't it? It's just the amount of cloud cover that pretty much like determines how hot it feels.
It's hard to describe, isn't it, how... I don't think hot's the word I'm looking for, but how strong the sun feels when the sun's shining on you directly. You feel like you're in a microwave oven.
Yeah, and it's just the humidity. Like, I can run in like dry heat. You know, I've run in loads of races where it's been 30 degrees, but the heat's been dry and I've run really well. But it's just the humidity, which is the killer. But, I mean, if you get a really windy day and, you know, and I'm in really good form, like this year, and I'm going really well on the bike, then I wouldn't need to run as the speed what he does to beat him, because we should hopefully drop him on the bike. You know, he's only what, 60 kilos. You get a really windy day with the crosswinds, it doesn't suit a small guy. You know, all the small guys, the ones that are going to really suffer, because it's a flat course, Kona. It comes down to absolute power and aerodynamic drag.
Yeah.
So if you're 60 kilos, you're probably only going to be putting out max, what, 250, 260 in an Ironman, like if you only weigh that much. So for me, if I'm putting out 300 watts and we've got the crosswinds that are strong, they're going to lose time. There's nothing they can do about it. You know, even if they're staying 12 meters behind, the crosswinds aren't, they're not going to gain much from sitting in a pack because of where the wind's coming from. That's going to have a more cooling effect on the run as well, because you've got the crosswinds with a really windy day, which is going to cool you down a bit more.
Yeah.
So you could like with 5 or 6 minutes, and then you've only got to run 2:44, 2:45, which if it feels cooler because of the winds and you're fitter on the run and you've got more experience, that's totally possible. So
I love the fighting spirit, Joe. Joe's praying for the return of the proper Kona winds and the days when like an 8:40 would win you Kona. That's the kind of day you want, when it's really gnarly.
Yeah, windy as possible, because I can run really well in an Ironman. I've got loads of times when my legs feel pretty knackered, you know, and I get off the bike and I feel pretty destroyed. Like, I felt like that so many times, you know, like Hamburg this year, I got off the bike and I felt like I was going to bonk, you know, because I'd like hardly any nutrition. But I just downed some energy drink and I still ran a 2:45 and I couldn't have felt any worse. I said after a mile, I said, saw Will Clark's miss, and I said, I feel like terrible. I said, like, there's, like, you know, I was thinking there's no way I'm going to finish this. But I took the first mile, looked at my watch, saw it was pretty good, you know, it was around 6 minutes, and I thought, oh, it doesn't feel as bad as what I thought, you know, and then get into it and your legs come round. So, you know, that I would probably be like that in Kona, you know, I'd push the bike hard, my legs come round, and if it's windier, it cools you down, and all the other guys who are used to getting a free ride in a pace line because there's no wind, they're suddenly going to lose a lot more, they're going to run slower because they've actually had to do some work. And you know, they're not going to run a 2:38, 2:39. They're probably going to run a 2:42 because they've had to work really hard on the bike as well. That's what we want. We want wind, like strong wind.
That's it. Bring the winds on for Joe. Right, listen, Joe, we've had some questions from listeners here in our Facebook group. So first up, we've had questions. We've had a few from different people, both Andrew Rudder and who else did we have here? Gary Fellows and Josh Gavsey all want to know about your change of bike. They're all big fans of you and your biking, and obviously you've just signed a new sponsorship deal with Quintana Roo. So tell us a little bit about that, please.
Yeah, so I was obviously on a ribble from like this, the July of this year till the end of 2018, and I was speaking to them and I was speaking to Quintana Roo for next year, and Quintana Roo were like happy to sponsor me for 2 years, and I tried the bikes and I felt the bike was great. And the guys, when I spoke to them, that, you know, they've got their own factory. They're really like into making the fastest bikes. They test it all, and you know, they've got the means to actually make the bikes themselves, so they can develop it as they want. You know, they don't like, you know, buy like an open mold or anything like that, you know, and they're making their own equipment. And I was happy with the bike and the fact they were able to give me like a 2 year deal. I wanted, because, you know, I don't want to change bikes every year. You know, I've been on a lot of different bikes, but that's, yeah, you know, I've been quite happy to stay with a bike, but I haven't actually been offered, you know, a 2 year deal before. So you know, you've had no choice, because if it comes to the end of the contract and, you know, you've not got one for the previous year, then you have to change, don't you, to a different bike. But also in other ways, it kind of means that I know what I want from a bike, because I've been through about 5 bikes in the last 2 years. So when I get on a bike, it's great. I'm pretty sure that I've got a good idea of what that feels like, because I've tried everything that's going.
Awesome.
You know, anyone's tried as many bikes as me in the last 18 months.
All right, next question. Both Claire Jones and another faker, Dyke, say, what would Joe's top 3 bits of advice for a first-time Ironman be who just want to finish? And she says in brackets, me.
Well, that's a tough one.
What bits of advice have you got for people who are doing the first Ironman? Think all the way back to when you did your first one.
I definitely say nutrition is definitely a big thing.
Yeah, get that practiced in training, for sure.
Yeah, and just like normal, like decent nutrition during the week, you know, as well. Because if you eat rubbish foods and stuff like that, you feel terrible, and that really affects your training, your sleep, and everything like that.
Yeah.
But also in terms of the actual race as well, you know, making like, I would aim for like, it's all personal preference, but I take about 90 grams of carbs now when I'm racing. But you'd want to practice that on like a decent brick session, you know, prior to the race. And that's the massive thing, because if you run out of carbs and you bonk, you're going to be walking on the run. Like, and even then you still might not even be able to walk the run to finish it. So definitely nutrition is the big thing.
Yeah, that's a key point, I think, that you said. It's got to be individual for individual people, hasn't it? Because you're a big old engine that can get that carbs down you. And I think for smaller people, especially like Claire, she's going to be wanting a lot less than that. But yeah, but that's a good, yeah. Get that practiced in training, I think, is the key.
Yeah.
Sean Spillane says, if you weren't into triathlon, what would you be doing?
God. Well, I don't know. Has anyone got a? I'd be posting up, wouldn't I? Has anyone got a job going? God knows what I'd do.
Gets a job. Alex Cox says,
"Good question, man."
Yeah, don't make him think about that yet, Sean.
I was quick at picking the bins up, like, and taking them to the van. So maybe I'd be all right at that.
Alex Cox says, "Is he going to marry Laura once he wins on the Big Island?" Oof, there's a tough one, eh? Don't let Laura listen to this in the background.
She is listening. Like, he's just dropped me right in it because she can hear it.
All right, we'll give you a free pass on that one then. How about that?
But going back to the other one as well, you know, you said about the three bits of advice as well. I'd also say, like, consistent training as well. You know, don't bite off more than you can chew with your training plan, because I've seen a lot of training plans where there's a lot of volume and people find it so daunting trying to do their first Ironman, where they've got, you know, they're trying to do some 20-hour weeks. They might have some kids as well, what they've got to look after as well, and they've got a full-time job, and it's just too much. I would say go on the approach that less is more, and make sure you can actually complete the training what you've got, and not feel completely shattered or tired all the time, and get that balance right. Because if you can do, say, two or three sessions of each sport a week, you know, obviously a couple of brick sessions, you know, or like two sessions on some days, and maybe have one, like, at least two easy days a week, you're probably going to be fine. You're easily going to get round it. But don't try and do too many hours and bite off more than you can chew, because I think you hear a lot from people, and some people will scare you into thinking that you need to do 20 hours a week every week to get round, when I don't think you do need to do that. I think if you can do 12 hours a week and you can do that consistently in, you know, in a decent build up, you can get round it and do better than.
So glad to hear you say that, because there are so many people are scared off from trying Ironman because they read about things keyboard warriors are typing in Facebook groups about needing to do 20-hour weeks. And you're right, Joe, it puts people off. So to hear, you know, a well-respected pro like you say that, I think is going to give a lot of people out there the confidence that the thing that they're doing that they can fit into their life is really working for them, and they shouldn't feel like they're missing out because they're not doing more. I think that's really key, mate. Yeah.
I mean, I train full time and I don't do much more than 20 hours a week, you know, because it's getting the quality sessions in as well, isn't it? You know, I think if you end up like doing a lot of training, sometimes you can end up feeling tired all the time. And then when you get to your key threshold sessions or VO2 max sessions, you can be too tired to hit the numbers. And, you know, you really need to be pretty fresh for them. And if you look at what other sports are doing, like, for instance, runners or something, if someone was training for a professional runner training for a marathon, they might only be doing like 10 to 12 hours of running a week, and then adding their gym stuff in as well and all the other stuff, they're probably only doing 16, 17 hours a week. And that could be like a top elite runner.
Yeah.
But, you know, a lot of people doing a marathon might only be doing 6 hours a week. So, you know, 12 hours in term for triathletes might not seem a lot, but if you compare it to what people are doing in other sports, that's probably quite a lot. You know, if you were swimming and doing 12 hours a week, you'd probably be swimming 40 to 50 Ks a week.
Yeah.
No, if you told someone you were swimming that, that'd be, you know, a swimmer, that's a decent amount, isn't it? You know,
totally. Yeah.
But, you know, when you've got kids and you've got a job as well to fit in around it, you know, it all takes it out of you.
Definitely, man. Good advice there from Joe Skipper. Listen, Joe, thanks so much for coming on and sharing your time with us, mate. It's been great hearing the story of Kona, and it's great to see you crack the top 10 there. So last question I'm going to leave you with is, what is the dream situation for you come the end of this year? What would you be telling us this time next year, having looked back over your 2019 season?
I'd like to win Texas and go really fast there. That's definitely a big aim for me. I'm going to do Frankfurt this year, and Jan Frodeno and Patrick Langer there, and I'd like to give them a good run for their money. Try and beat them. So if I could beat them there, then that would be really good.
Nice.
And then Kona, I guess if I podiumed in Kona, that would be really good. I mean, yeah, You've got to be aiming for that, haven't you? You know, shoot for the stars and land on the clouds. You know, if you fail, there's no point aiming for mediocrity, is there? So yeah, I'd say I'd be really pleased if I said to you, I'd won Texas and I'd won Frankfurt and I'd podiumed in Kona. That'd be really good.
Nice. Yeah, we'll take that. Brilliant, you know, stuff.
I can't aim for any less than that. Do you know what I mean? Like when I'm training, I'm not thinking of like, you know, oh, I want to finish fifth in one of these places. Do you know what I mean? Like, you know.
Yeah, good for you. Well, you're good enough, Joe. You get in there and give them a run for the money.
Yeah, if you said to me, would I take, you know, third place in one of them other races? I'd say, no, I wouldn't take third place. I'd, you know, that's very nice of you to offer me third place, but I'd rather try my luck and see if I can win it. And maybe I don't and I come 10th, but I'd like to take my chances and see if I can win it. I wouldn't take third. So, you know, like if I'm speaking from the heart, I'd want to win it.
Good lad. That's great, Joe. That's the attitude we want. We want people who are going to go out there and race for the win. And if you don't win,
you know, like I'd say, yeah, exactly. So, you know, that's what I'd have to do. And obviously a top three in Kona would be a massive step up, you know, from going from seventh to that. And then the next year you go for the win, don't you? So, you know, like if I'm honest and I'm thinking and I'm speaking from what I actually want to do, that's what I want to do. You know, I don't want to aim for sixth place in Kona or fifth place. You know, it doesn't really motivate me. I might as well get seventh again. But, you know, the next step up is getting on the podium, isn't it? Well, that's in my head it is anyway, you know. If you're fourth, you're the first loser, in fact, you know, aren't you? You're not on the podium. So, and I think to get on the podium and then you go back and then the only logical step once you've been on the podium is to win it, isn't it, really? You know?
That's it, mate. Really. Like, you keep heading in that right direction. There we go. So we'll mark that down on Joe's little post-it. Win Texas, win Frankfurt, podium in Kona.
That's if I'm speaking from the heart, that's what I'm at. That's what, you know, like obviously when I'm training that's what you're thinking about, isn't it? You know, that's what motivates you. And obviously, you know, there's probably 10 other people that are thinking about the same things that want to do that, which is why it makes it so difficult. But, you know, we're all shooting for the same thing. None of us are going out, I don't think, in training, thinking, oh, I want to finish sixth place in Frankfurt, you know. You know what I mean? It's not what's getting you through them hard days in training, is it?
That's it, man. Brilliant. Hey, well, listen, thank you again so much for your time, mate. We'll leave you to get back to your evening sunset in Australia, dinner with Laura, and who knows, maybe even coffee and cocktails. And we look forward to hearing more of your updates again in the future, mate. Enjoy your time down in Australia.
Cheers. Thanks very much, Rob.
Cracking stuff, Hells, and I hope he gets some luck this year when he goes over to race in Texas. It's not long away now, is it?
No, my fingers are very, very much crossed. It's if you go and have a look at his Instagram stuff, Rob, it looks like he's been, yeah, absolutely having a really, really good time in Australia getting the training in. And I looked at a video of him swimming just before Christmas, and it looked really good.
Yeah.
Might have been just after Christmas, actually, but he looked so... Honestly, his stroke looked fantastic, and I think Paul Newsome was very, very pleased with the work that he had, you know, put in and the improvements that he had made, and yeah, it was looking really good.
I've got a feeling that an athlete like Joe working with a coach like Paul is going to be a really great combination. Paul's so good with the getting inside an athlete's mind and the positive comments, and you get the feeling that Joe just laps that stuff up, and if he's got a coach there telling him the good stuff that he's doing, he's going to do more of it for that coach. I'm really excited to see the effects it has on his race this year coming up.
Yeah, he's been putting out some good numbers. He said the other day, really pleased with my power outputs for this session. 362, 375 and 370 watts average for the efforts, which were three lots of 20 minutes. Heart rate in the 150s.
Wowzers.
There you go.
That's some big wattage being put out.
That's Joe Skipper for you.
Yeah, can't wait to see him. Can't wait to see him on that. I think actually as well, I think the Texas course has been revised, hasn't it, since he last raced there. It's even faster now than it was back then, so.
Isn't it basically along the highway?
Yeah.
Yeah.
I can't remember. It was definitely last year when it was that super, super fast year. I can't remember whether it had been slightly changed. It's always been a fast course, but it was uber fast, wasn't it, last year?
Yeah. Yeah.
Yeah.
Don't know.
Exciting times.
There you go.
All right, so we've got a couple of bits of news, but before we do that, we're sponsored by our new sponsor, Thriver.co. So this is really cool. They're a company that do convenient home blood testing. So this is dead, dead simple. They send you a box through the post. You open it up. You do a finger prick onto your little stamper thing, and it doesn't hurt. You go click on your little finger. You squeeze out 4 drops of blood into a tiny little test tube that they send you. It came out for me in under about 15 seconds. Bloop, 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 bloop. Put the lid on top of the little kit. You pop it into a pre-packaged envelope with your name on it, send it back to them. Hells, from the minute I opened the box to the minute I sealed the envelope was less than 5 minutes, including the time to read the instructions. And I'm not the smartest cookie in the box, you know? So,
oh, yeah, that's good. That's quick.
It's amazing, right? So I've been kind of after having a blood test for a while, and I actually tried to make an appointment at the GP, right pain in the bum. And then once you go, you get sent into Warrington, and it was one of those like... In fact, I'll be dead honest, this time last year, I actually didn't go and have my blood tested because I just didn't have the time to go and do it. So this took literally 5 minutes from having arrived. And get this, the results were back with me online 24 hours later. So I put it, really? Put it in the post box, I think it was Tuesday morning, first thing, and had the results at lunchtime on Wednesday. So they send them through on like an email dashboard thing. And I'm going to call up the little thing in the background here because they did a test for to do cholesterol, liver function, iron profile, vitamin D, vitamin B12, all other kinds of stuff as well. But for me, I've gone almost entirely vegan for the last 2 years or so, and I've been feeling really, really run down. And a friend of mine said to me, B12 is always a thing if you're going to a vegan diet and you're feeling really tired. You need to get it checked, mate. And I was like, yeah, whatever. So some days I'd be fine. And other days I'd be just falling asleep and just feeling like I couldn't do any training, basically. So I got the results back. And lo and behold, guess what's really low in my blood test?
The B12.
That's it, the B12. So you get this online dashboard thing, and to make it dead easy for even numbskulls like me to understand, because it's like a slider for each one of the tests, from like green's good, amber's a bit dodge, red's, oh, you need to seriously look at this. And then they give you a little write-up from a British GP underneath each of the results. So it tells you, yeah, this is fine. Yeah, this is in this range. Oh, hang on, this is in red. You need to do this about it. So either change your diet this way or take this supplement. I was really impressed with it. And for someone like me who like was a little bit concerned about it, I feel stupid for not having it tested a year ago, because potentially I could have had this sorted a year ago. Do you know what I mean? But yeah. The stumbling block was getting actually into the half-hour drive into Warrington to have the blood test taken.
So what are you going to do about the B12, Rob?
Well, for me, it's dead simple. I've just got to take a supplement, because the thing with B12 is you can't get it from plant-based diets. It only comes from animal products. So it's a really big thing with the vegan diet, apparently. If you're just eating plant-based food, it just doesn't exist outside of animal produce. So it's essential in the sort of energy production and not feeling completely knackered when you're training heavily. So take a B12 supplement, and I'm going to do a test again in another month to see what it's like. And I don't know whether this is psychosomatic, but I do feel better. It's nice though, just to get all your results back and be like, okay, cholesterol, it's all good. Liver function, it's all good. Iron profile, it's all good. And it's little things that I'm not the kind of person that bothers actually, but looking at it, I did get a sense of, oh, it's nice to have this checked. And I don't know, probably at 46, I should have had a cholesterol test by now, right?
Probably, but yeah.
I don't know. And maybe I don't represent the normal person, but I think I probably do. Who goes to the doctors and goes, I need a blood test to have my cholesterol done, unless you think you've got a problem? So, yeah, I don't know. I think it's a really cool product. And it's worked really well for me. I was really impressed with it. It's dead, dead handy. And they've given us 50% off the first test for listeners. So if you go to thriver.co, you type in the code OXYGENADDICT, you get 50% off your first test. So I think if you're interested in having it done, it's a no-brainer.
Great.
Sounds good, eh?
Yeah.
Right. So a bit of news that I've seen this week, Hells. The Ironman UK Military Division Qualifier. Have you seen this?
I did notice this. Ironman UK As you say, will be the military division qualifier, which means that effectively,
so 10
Rob,
extra slots for athletes who are in active military duty.
Yep.
And am I right in reading this? It's the only Ironman race in the world that has these slots.
European.
The only European race that's got these slots. Right, okay, good. I knew it was in something like that.
Yeah, and it's separate to the age group qualification slots.
So is it as simple as if you're in the active military, you all sign up and the first 10 across the line for the military get the slots? Or did they divide them up? I wonder according to, they must do it according to sex and age as well, mustn't they?
So if you're eligible to compete in the military division, you can choose whether to compete in that or remain in the standard age group. And then start, if you go for the military division, you start in a special wave ahead of the age group rolling start. And then like roll down and slot allocation is done in conjunction with the age group athlete slot allocation.
So it's pretty cool. It's like a separate race for them as well then, isn't it? If you're, if you're in and amongst that, then great stuff. I'd be interested to find out more details about that, actually. I don't think my thirst for knowledge has not been answered, Hells, by the article we've got in front of us. So if anyone knows, send us some information through about that. That's all good.
I think there'll be plenty of people who would be able to fill us in on that.
I think so, yeah. Let's hope so. Now, the other bit of news on this is there's still no confirmed news on the Bolton bike course. The rumour is that it's been changed. There's things floating around in social media about an apparently like Ironman branded new bike course, and some of the athletes I coach have actually been out and ridden it, and it's super hilly, Hills. It's ridiculously hilly, this draft bike course. But the word is it might not be the one that they're going to use. Apparently they're still in like chats with whoever it is, Chorley Council, I think, to maybe be able to use the old course still. So there's no confirmed news. There's this new course that people are getting out and riding, but then there's talks are up and running again, apparently, about using the old course still. So who knows what might happen. But I'll tell you what, if they use this new one, it is brutal.
I did just click on a link through to like a Strava map of this proposed new course, or I guess one of them. And it looks pretty pretty tasty there.
They'll be taking on Wales for the mantle of toughest course for sure.
I think it doesn't look like there's any flat.
No.
Maybe like the tiny bit when you come back into, you know, into the centre of Bolton or something, but or from out from Pennington Flat.
The rest of it's some serious hill. That stretch in's all right, and then the stretch back to Bolton's all right, and the rest of it, there's some serious grinding hills.
Yeah.
So let's see. Far be it from us from spreading rumours. It's all good.
It would be good though if anyone knows any more or if you're doing it, etc. Would love to hear your thoughts.
Get it up in the Oxygen Addict Facebook group. That'd be brill. Right, Hells, we should wrap this up really, shouldn't we? We've waffled on somehow. We've got all excited and waffled on tonight. That's all good. So we'll tie it up. We'll say thanks to our sponsors, precisionhydration.com. Use the code OxygenAddict. Foodcell.co.uk. Use the code FreePost. And Thriver.co. Use the code OxygenAddict. And until next week, I hope you have a great training racing week. I'm Coach Rob Wilby.
I'm Helen Murray.
And tune in again next week. Hells, who's our interview of the week going to be with next week, please?
Next week it is going to be with Katie Zafiras.
Wonderful. Tune in next week then, guys. Until then, we'll see you later. Take care of yourselves. See ya.